D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 117. It's Tuesday. Not only is it Tuesday, but it's the second Tuesday of the month, which means Windows updates. Yay! So for all of you Windows administrators out there, you're thinking, great, I know what my weekend plans are, but it could have been worse. It could have been last Tuesday, which would have been Mother's Day. Last weekend, which would have been Mother's Day. But anyways, I digress. Before we go any further, I want to give a big congratulations to our friend Cody Supercoop. His son was born today, so we have another addition to the Podnuts network. I will do everything in my abilities to not call him Mini Cooper, but I just wanted to give a congratulations to Cody and his wife. The baby is just absolutely beautiful. So congratulations, Cody.
Congratulations. Great. Yeah,
and that other voice there, the master of all Mastersons, Mitch, how's it going?
Okay. I've been having trouble with my eyes lately. So I am going to have an eye lift.
What?
I have drooping eyelids really bad. So I failed a test miserably, which means I qualify insurance-wise. They'll cover it. Yeah, it was just, it's even worse when I'm tired. And, so I'm going on the 20th. I will be getting that fixed.
So that's next Tuesday.
No, 20th of June. I'm sorry.
Oh, the 20th of June.
Yeah.
Got it. So. That's a Friday. So will you be joining us, or will you be out for a little bit?
No, I don't think so. I'll be black and blue, I think she said, for 2 weeks.
Oh.
So I'll just say, Martin, hit me. Nah. He got mad at me.
I drove all the way to Philadelphia, and I went, kapow!
Hanover.
Well, yeah. Philadelphia. We'll come meet Tim. Tim and I each take an eye.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. So how are things going with you, though, other than being sleepy and having to get some surgery done?
This ever-going job that I upgraded this Windows XP machine to Windows 7, it's running fine, put 4 gigs of RAM memory in it from 1 gig. But they are so, their mindset is they still got to use your old software, which doesn't work with Windows 7. So they have like one of these American Greetings credit card type software thing. And
Yeah,
it's discontinued. This is an older version. I said, the only thing we can do is, we have the XP mode, but that you need, I think, above Home Edition for that. And that's what they have. I said, well, we can do VirtualBox. Let me bring me the stuff here. So, I put it in a VirtualBox and got Windows XP on it, and it's working fine, that software. Which probably could go into Smithsonian. So, well,
did compatibility mode at all work?
Yeah, not at all.
No,
nope.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the school that I work at, they upgraded to Windows 7, and they're using an old version of Oregon Trail, and it doesn't work on Windows 7 very well. So, want to make sure that it actually, looking for a way to get it to run on 7. Runs great on Windows XP. They called the manufacturer. The manufacturer said, no, it's not even supported on Windows 7. They're not planning on supporting it on Windows 7. So it's really has been kind of end of life for a while now. Kind of sounds like the same situation you're in. They may just say, or find a web-based version. But I may bring up VirtualBox, but that would mean that I would have to install, it's for students, so I'd have to install VirtualBox at every single computer, unless we did some kind of a terminal server back to the server. And I think that may just, for the small amount of gain and the large amount of work, they may just say, nah, never mind.
Are they Windows 7 home machines?
No, they're all pro because they're on a domain.
Well, you could do the thing. You should be eligible for the XP mode. It might even be easier than and then you can integrate it into your start menu where. I haven't done it, but you can do that where, from what I'm reading and looking online, where, it'll be in their start menu, where they can start up the program and seamlessly where they won't even know they're in, a virtual machine.
Right. They currently, right now, it's a link. It's actually, they bought the networked version. So the application runs on the network, and on the desktop, there's just a shortcut. So I will have to probably take the application on a 2008 server, run it in compatibility mode, then turn around and run the shortcut in compatibility mode. Testing with it. It was just something they kind of said, hey, this is a problem we're having. You know, you probably want to look into getting this fixed. And it's on my to-do list. Gotcha. We'll definitely be getting that.
VirtualBox isn't bad, but like you say, you'll have to configure each specific machine for that.
Right. And I'm not sure that they want me to. That's probably not a great use of my time to going around to 100 different machines and spending.
Yeah.
So we're looking at something else.
He's going to want, like, they do have a new version of Office on Windows 7. But they have like Office 2003, which isn't supported anymore. Right. But they know how to use it, and they use their publisher. So I might wind up putting that on the XP VM too.
Oh yeah,
because they know how to do it.
I've got a client that they needed publisher, and we installed the full version of LibreOffice. But then we just did the draw. She hasn't had time to mess with it, and I'm going to see what happens. I have a feeling that because they really want Publisher, they're very experienced with Publisher, and I think draw will work for them, but I don't think that they're going to want that. So she's going to try it out, but I'm pretty sure, 80% sure that what will happen is they'll call me back and they'll say, we'd like to purchase.
They spent this money. Well, Publisher. He had it before, but I mean, for Office 2010, they don't use it. We put it on there, but it's so different than Office 2003, and they wind up, you know, so we're going to put that old version on XP in the VMware. Hopefully everything will work fine for them. I mean, I tested it up here. Well, just the that American Greetings, and it worked fine on my i5, you know, in VirtualBox on XP. I even printed, except I don't have a color printer. But it worked. Okay. I started messing with it, creating a card.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had mentioned at the beginning of the show about security patches, being that it's the second Tuesday of the month, and GHAX came out with their list of security patches and stuff like that. And Microsoft says, this is actually from their website. It says, this is the first month after end of support for the popular Windows XP operating system. Microsoft did release a patch for Windows XP after end of support to address a security issue in Internet Explorer, but made it clear that this was an exemption rather than something that XP users should get used to. The company will reveal a total of 8 security bulletins this month addressing vulnerabilities in Windows, Office, Internet Explorer, server software, productivity software, and the Microsoft.NET framework. 2 bulletins have received the highest severe rating of critical, while the remaining 6 are important. The 2 that are critical is an Internet Explorer 11 issue and a Microsoft Server. It's a group of policy preference that could allow elevation of privileges. So if you have, you know, Windows or servers, make sure you go ahead and keep them up to date. But that can be found, that's the security bulletins. And those came out today. So make sure you get your Windows updated. So what happens is, so I know they came out today. It'll go on my list of things to do this weekend. I'll be rebooting, updating, and then rebooting servers this weekend. One other, something really cool that I found, being a Star Wars geek, and I don't know if you've ever noticed, but behind me, I gotta find it, the reverse camera, I have Darth Tater, I have Spud Trooper, I've got, Chewbacca up there, and, I've got some Star Wars stuff behind me up on the shelf. there is a, in London, there is a famous, stage studio, kind of like what we have, you know, you have in the States and in Hollywood and Burbank and stuff like that. It's called Elstree, E-L-S-T-R-E. This company is going to be doing a show called Elstree 1976, and I don't know if they're going to keep that name. But what it is this producer is in the process of trying and going around and interviewing people from behind the scenes, behind the mask of the Star Wars shows. So it's things like he's going to interview the guy behind the mask of Greedo, the guy behind the mask of, you know, some stormtroopers, or, you know, some of the people in the cantina and some of the people in Jabba the Hutt's, you know, palace and stuff like that. So he's going through, and it's just, he's going to make a documentary on this about what these actors experienced. And I watched the trailer for a little bit, and there was one lady who played a character on there, and, she did her job, and that was that. And it kind of sounded like maybe she was looking for some work, and somebody came to her and said, you know, there's a whole bunch of people who are into this. And now she goes from trade show, basically from Star Wars Fest to Star Wars Fest, you know, with her name and her, you know, her pictures, and she signs autographs, and that's what she does now. And I thought, you know, And that's pretty cool. And I think back many years ago before kids, when my wife and I were just fairly newly married, and I was living in the Bay Area in a little town called Santa Rosa, which is just north of San Francisco across the bridge. And Jeremy Bullock was going to be in town, and Jeremy Bullock plays Boba Fett. And my wife, I went to work, but my wife stood in line with a whole bunch of geeky nerds. And I would be there with them, but she stood in line, and I have a signed Boba Fett action figure. It's still in the case. It's one of the original ones, but it's signed by him. And so this documentary kind of touches a little bit to me. Now, it's all in pounds, so it's a Kickstarter, but for 10 pounds, which is right about $14, $14.50, you get a digital download of the film. For 20 pounds, you get the digital download again. But you get a DVD this time, and digital download. But the DVD also has a second disc, which is bonus features and stuff. So, you know, and that 20 pounds is right about $40. So, and you can go for the Blu-ray, you can go to thanks in the end credits, all the way down to, I think the highest one is a 5,000 pounds. So that would probably be close to about $10,000. You get corporate sponsorship, your company presents credits on the films, you get, tickets to the London premiere. You get a whole bunch of stuff. So
he's trying to finance this film?
Through Kickstarter.
Okay.
So, I see why they're doing it through Kickstarter. They have 53 days to go. They need 30,000 pounds, or they've asked for 30,000 pounds, and they've raised 12,417. So they're close to half done with 53 days to go. So, and it started on... They're on June 6th, so I don't know. It doesn't say when it first created. I'd have to look and see some information about it. But it looks pretty fun. Looks like a fun documentary. Being a Star Wars geek, I'd watch it.
See, I I'm older. I like Star Wars, but I still like Star Trek way better. But that's me. I might be in a group alone. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of Trekkies out there. Me, I've always been a Star Wars fan, but I'm much younger.
That age where you were young when Star Wars came out.
I didn't grow up with Star Trek, you know, the TV right. show or anything like that. I grew up on, I was born in 76, so I grew up with Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Sounds like, I'm looking forward to it. It sounds like it's going to be a good show. So we have a couple emails, and before I go to a couple more links, so I thought I'd start with one of these emails, and one of these emails actually, John, if you're listening, one of these emails I spoke with, Josh, I spoke with Josh yesterday, and we talked about some stuff, and then sure enough, yesterday night, I had this huge, big issue. But we'll start with one from Alistair, and Alistair is from, he's been on a couple times, he's from the UK, and actually he was just on Podnuts Daily with Josh. And he was on the server show actually as well with Josh as well. No, he was on the Podnuts Daily with Jeff Halish. And then him and Josh did a server show on the Podnuts server show where Alistair goes through setting up a domain controller. And it is really good. If you guys ever thought about setting up a domain controller or, how to, there's a lot of stuff online. But this one by Alistair is really, really good. And he goes step by step by step to the point of, I want to go back, hear it again. I've set up domains many times, but there's always little things to go, that you always forget. And he just goes through it. Great job, Alistair. So he says, hi, Martin. Can he pass this on to the other guys? Hi, Martin, Tim, Mitch, PC Freddy. I would like to thank you for a brilliant show with Matt Rainey. Really, really good show. The Matt Rainey show was episode 115. That's the last one posted on if you go to podcast.com and Geeksters, you'll see that one. Martin was talking about Server 2012 and he had not used it much. If you'd like, I could come on and talk about it on the show. I've sent an email into the show before about the D-Link backdoor and CryptoLocker. I'm trying to get into podcasts to, one, give something back to Podnuts, and two, try to improve my speaking more confidently. I've already done a show with Jeff on the server show about a domain AD, which hopes should be published soon. I am an IT consultant / third line support for an IT company supporting medium sized businesses, 100 to 1,000 user base. I would like to start podcasts like Podnuts Pro. Don't want to step on Matt Rainey's toes, as I can't seem to find any other podcasts out there like this, where I can discuss things like Exchange Server, networking, virtualization, migrating and upgrading server software, etc., and talk about stories from the trenches. I hope you find a co-host from Europe, as I am emailing from the UK. Let me know your thoughts, Alistair. I think that's a good idea. We hope that, we talked with Matt Rainey. He was talking about possibly coming back. having some every now and then shows, but I mean, life just is busy, you know, and that's what it is. But, and our, you know, our time zones from us, to Alistair are really, they're way off. I think, when Jeff and Alistair got together and did the server show, it was 2 p.m. Saturday afternoon for Jeff, and Jeff is 2 hours ahead of me. So that would have been 11 o'clock or noon my time, and it would have been 10 o'clock in the evening for Alistair. So there's a, yeah, so there's quite a bit of a time difference. So, but yeah, I think that would be really fun. I think if he had a show where he went through and talked more about what was going on with, servers and virtualization and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, that'd be pretty cool. So the next one from, this is from Josh Dennis, and Josh is out of Vancouver, British Columbia. He's actually emailed us once before as well. He says, "Hey Martin, thanks for reading my email about Screen Connect on Geeksters. I was having major issues a while ago accessing Macs from my distro of Ubuntu, running Ubuntu to test it out, looking forward to moving into the next distro. I did some testing. I did a text testing connection with the folks at Screen Connects, and they have experienced the issue too, so hopefully they're patching it. Since we last exchanged emails, I have moved from the mountains of BC to Vancouver Island. Internet connection is pretty good here so far, and I would have been able to port forward my NAS, so I think I'll do okay with anything else I want to run. I would love to have made Northwest Linux Fest, but arrived too late. Did you end up going? How was it? I lived in Bellingham for about 5 years, and it was always a nice town. Okay, on to the question at hand. I was wondering, what would you recommend for a shared internet connection? Basically, we have moved into a rental, and the owner lives in a cottage right next door. I will be in control of the internet in all aspects, but he would like to have access while sharing the costs also. As I will be using the same connection for work purposes, I will need to have all other access to be isolated from my own. Is this possible by creating a guest account on any old router, or would you recommend something a little more sophisticated? The first thing I thought of was your discussion of Skydog, and perhaps is that an option also? Thanks for any advice, and please let me know what I can do for you, if anything. I'd love to contribute to Geeksters if I can. Cheers, Josh Dennis." So yesterday I spoke with Josh. And what we had, we got a chance to just sit down and talk about his needs. And Skydog is not going to really work for him in this instance. Skydog is great for kids because it does the content filtering and stuff like that. He just needs an isolated network. So we talked, and I gave him a couple options. One would be, right off of his router, he would need to keep the same IP address and then assign a static IP address, not inside the DHCP scope, to another router. And then that would, and then from there, the DHCP off that other, the second router would be another IP address. So he would have, be essentially running two different DHCP scopes, and he could isolate it that way. The other way would be to, write off his cable modem into one router. We'll call that router one, and then split again to router two and router three, and then have them all on three different private networks. And of course, you can have 10.172.16 and then 192.168. Those could be your three different ones. So it sounds like that requires buying a couple more devices. So it sounds like he may just keep the primary router. So maybe it's a 192.168.1.1, you know, 1. IP address range off of his current router. I would tell him to shrink the DHCP scope to maybe, you know, 100 to 150. So now you have 1.1 to .99. as available, and then 151 to 255, 254 available. Does that make sense? On both sides of the DHCP scope. And then assign the LAN IP address. Just assign, don't worry about the WAN. You would assign the IP address of the other box on the WAN side, something outside of the DHCP scope. So maybe 1.2. And then assign the, and then create the DHCP scope off the new router, maybe a 172.16 something IP address. So now his work will be 172.16, but it can pass through and into the 192.168 and then back out to the internet, therefore isolating his network completely. So that's something he can do. And I've done that at other sites as well. Especially where sites where you have to have a private and a public one. Now, if you really, so that's the one way, and then back to the other way is the completely isolating it by doing the same thing, but maybe doing a 192.168 on your first hop router. And then from there, getting another router that's a 172.16 and another router that's a 10 dot. Now you have complete isolation.
Do you have to have different routers to do this? More than one router?
Yes, because you would need, Well,
because, you know, I have that Fortinet. I think it's a C60. I don't know. Is that a layer? I think it's a layer, the one my son put in, and I won't mess with it. It's too sophisticated for me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, some of them do. I guess if you had a guest and a, I think if you had a guest network and a public network, you know, if you have a private and a guest network, you could do something along the same lines. You'd want to make sure you have two different DHCP scopes inside of that, not just a matter of, you know, a guest wireless and a private wireless.
Well, this is, it's not wireless at all. This is before I get to the wireless. So he's got that on another switch. But I got another switch, just a little four port cheap Netgear switch. And then he says, if I'm working on a machine, use that. That will keep it separated from the other ones. I don't know what he did, but.
So he probably did the same thing where he separated the network. And is that little four port may be coming out with a different IP address. Now, what you have there, you may have some higher advanced stuff where he's actually doing routing and VLANs, you know, on a managed switch. And that's those type of things you're not going to find on your little home office router stuff. That's you're talking, you know, higher end networking gear and switching and routing protocols that most people, you know, David was able to settle that up for you, but most people don't have that in their home at all.
I log in there once in a while, but I'm looking and it's just not like, you know, a regular router is intuitive. You know, you can mess around in there and figure things out or find information. But this is, I'm afraid to mess around with it. But I tell you what, the only time it's ever been down when we lost power. I mean, I guess it's been up for like a year, probably a year and a half, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very stable. He's done a job of making it stable. It's just he's been, you know.
The only thing it's not gigabyte, and they just raised, you know, like Comcast. I can get up to 105, but not with that. I'm not going to get it with that switch, you know.
Well, you could. I mean, you could get 105. You may not be able to get 100 out. That's, you know, that's the thing where, you know, if you have.
He told me I couldn't get it because it's not. I don't.
Yeah. Like, well, at my home, I mean, I have my download is 50, but but all my devices are gig. So it doesn't matter because I'm still, my bottleneck is not internally. My bottleneck is actually how fast can I pull data down from the internet?
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, from the Comcast servers, I do quite well. I can get in the 80s and the 90s.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we forgot to mention, while it was just you and I tonight, Tim is with his daughter doing some family stuff again. So it may be just Mitch and I for a couple weeks. But that's, you know, that's how it goes. We're all busy. It's summer season. Tim's got some family stuff coming up, and it is what it is. But that's okay. We'll still be here. We'll still do Geeksters.
Yeah. If I can say something, you know, my contract is going to be up on the 28th for Verizon of this month, and I got something from mail from Xfinity Comcast, all right, saying they would, if I buy a phone between now and such date, I'll get a $200 Visa prepaid card, you know, if I buy a new line or an upgrade, which my upgrade is going to cover this time period, which is the 28th. And I was thinking about going to Virgin Mobile because I'm not that heavy, you know, I don't download hop, a lot of apps, and I don't root and ROM, you know, I mean, only when I need to. But that's a pretty good deal. I mean, $200, you know, I'm looking at the HTC one or the S5 I was thinking about going to Virgin Mobile and paying, you know, the no contract thing, $35 a month, but their phones are not up to par, nowhere near. Now I'm on their site today. They have the LG Volt from Virgin Mobile. It's a quad core and it's got some decent specs. Not like the, you know, the latest greatest that I was kind of interested in, but it's pretty good. And so they have that, the LG Volt, for $179. I think it just went on sale yesterday, but there's no reviews on it yet. I'm trying to find, you know, there's nothing on there yet. But the specs are pretty good. 8 gigabytes onboard memory, which is better than some of the other phones I was looking at there. And for $179, it's not too bad. And they give you a month of a credit for 1 month, which is $35. So,
oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. But, you know, Sprint, I mean, they use the Sprint network, which is what Virgin Mobile uses. And, yeah, my wife says, you know, you might not be happy. You know, I'm just trying to save, you know, money a little bit. And, but then again, with the $200 credit, well, not the Visa prepaid card that I would get, if I get a phone through Comcast, a Verizon phone, which is weird. I think, why do they send me something like this? So they, I don't know, there's some kind of partnership with that, Comcast and Verizon. So, but I, you know, but I'm looking at the HTC One 2, HTC One M8, and it's a really, it's a nice phone. Just decisions, man, decisions.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I am not the cell guy. I don't know phones, and I, you know.
Well, I know enough. I talked to Door.
Yeah,
and, Door and Ellis. And I'm just looking at the reviews, but the thing is, like, Cody? The HTC One and the S5, they're kind of competing with each other. They're probably the two top ones out there. But Door mentioned, and I've just been reading a lot, the LG 2 is a pretty top-of-the-line phone, but they're coming out with the LG 3, which is going to have some hellacious specs on that thing. I mean, I don't know what the price is going to be on that coming out. Cause, like the S5 and the HTC One, they're around 200 and maybe on sale for 100. And I'm not sure what that's going to be, but it's going to have, the LG 3 is going to have some really unbelievable specs that I probably won't use anyway. I don't game, you know, but I still like to have latest and greatest. You know how that is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maybe, I know Cooper's in the, and Cody's in the chat. Maybe he can chime in a little bit, because when it comes to phones, I'm just.
I think he just switched from a new contract plan, I believe. I think he's doing the.
I know he has the Nexus 5 and loves it. Loves it.
Well, see,
it.
You couldn't do that on Verizon. They don't. They won't. Can't do that on Verizon. No. It's a Nexus 5.
Yeah. How was your you switched over to Ubuntu a couple weeks ago, or were trying it out?
Yes, I did, and you had mentioned, you know, get the GNOME desktop, and I did. And it's got like four choices when you boot up, like 2D, Classic, GNOME, and something else. And I wanted to see if I could come here when we do a show and use that without it crashing on me and, you know, recording the Audacity. And that's my goal. And I'm not sure why I had all those crashes in Arch and in Mint, because I've never had a whole... I really had no problems before. Now, I don't know if, you know, I keep on saying I need to run Mend test, and I haven't done that yet. But that, it's on a Core 2 Quad, which is an older, but still a nice machine.
Yeah.
I got 4 gigs of RAM in it. But I'm using a IDE hard drive that's got one of those adapters on it to convert it to SATA. I don't know if that would have anything to do with it. You know, the
maybe.
It's just weird, because I never, you know, it was just like, actually, and then I think before I put GNOME on there, this is in Ubuntu. Firefox crashed on me one time, went out. I did put Chrome on there, not Chromium. I put Chrome on there. Well, so that's working well.
One of the things you could try and see if it's to bypass the cable, you know, that IDE to SATA thing, is go get a SATA PCI card or SATA PCIe card. And so you're plugging right to the motherboard. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a SATA. It's mostly SATA. See, but I only have one IDE in there, and my DVD player is on that. So... this was just an old hard drive I had laying around. Actually, I think David gave that to me. And so I wanted to use it. Actually, I probably could use the ID. I don't need the CD-ROM, really, on that thing. But I'll see what happens. Like, maybe next time we do a show, we can... I was going to record with it and just take my laptop over and just have that, you know, with Windows 7 on it, just do a separate recording in there just in case it would crash. But well, I think you only had one crash.
Yeah,
and
that was on my older machine, which
that's right.
Which was my Core 2. Yeah. But my new machine, I haven't had any crashes at all. It's I think I've had it hiccup on me a couple times, and even then I'm really surprised that it actually hiccups on me.
I like Ubuntu. I mean, Unity wasn't that bad, but I'm just, you know, GNOME's more traditional. I haven't had any. I mean, everything was real that I wanted to install, like Java can be I use that for one site. You can't use the open source one. It won't work with that.
Oh, yeah. And, I can't remember the name of that open source Java.
Yeah. Something Iced Tea or something like that. There's a T in there. But it didn't install anyway. But I know before I always had trouble. I always had to install that first, but I never even installed this. So I got the commands to install Java, and it just copy and paste. Just worked. Everything worked fine. No problems. I mean, I got everything on there that I want. I might want to. I got TeamSpeak on there, and maybe I'll want to install. What's the app we use for the Sunday show on Podnuts? Sunday and Monday show, it alternates.
Oh, Mumble.
Yeah, I need to put that on there.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about the Podnuts Hangout. The Podnuts meetup. But that's only, it's not, it doesn't alternate anymore. It's just on Sundays.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, because Monday. Go ahead. Because Monday.
That's the only thing I have left to put on there. I mean, I got everything on there but that I want to put on there. Sorry about that.
I keep stepping on you and I apologize. Monday, Linux for the Rest of Us moved to Mondays.
Okay.
So that's why.
Okay.
That's why. We had talked about GNOME in the past, and I wanted to try GNOME Ubuntu. That comes with the classic or GNOME shell and then a version of the classic shell. And I put it on there, and it was okay. I didn't like it very much. And I think you
weren't getting any crashes.
Oh, no, I wasn't getting crashes. Okay. But I installed it, spent a good time configuring it, and it just didn't have everything I needed. What I did notice is that in the GNOME Ubuntu, the classic shell is different than the GNOME fallback, which is what I'm running on 12.04. So I loaded it with Unity and then did the classic shell, the GNOME fallback on that. And that actually works quite well.
And how different is it?
Well, it's a little bit of where the placements are. It's not hugely different, but it's just enough different that I didn't like it. Now, I have a feeling what it is it's not necessarily has nothing to do with the interface. It has to do with the Ubuntu 14.04. There's just some things that aren't running well for me. Not crashes, it's preferences. They're not using Nautilus anymore as their default file manager. Yeah. They're using something else. I like Marlin. I've been using Marlin for a long time. Marlin's not available in 14.04 yet. There's a couple applications leaving last night on Linux for the Rest of Us. We talked about there's an application called something Bullet where you can actually send links and comments to multiple people from your Ubuntu desktop or Linux desktop to Android devices.
I had that before. It's a push thing technology, the Bullet. Is that what you're talking about?
It's a little green thing.
Yeah. But I had it for a while, but
it's not available. It's only available on 1310, 1404. So on my 1204 desktop, which is rock solid, works great. I can't put it on there. You know, it just means that I'm going to have to be moving up with the times and it is what it is, but it's still one of those things that's like, duh, you know, and you know, 1404 is fairly new. It's just come out. I still can be running my 1204, but just like when, you know, they went, as versions upgrade, the makers stop supporting older versions and they continue looking forward, which is reasonable. But the problem is that sometimes you get left behind.
I'm on 1204. I mean, I think you and Dor recommended 12.04 and most stable. But I need to do something like be in a hangout for a while and be recording stuff at the same time to really see how it's going.
Yeah. Last week, I went to the school that I work at again. I had some students help me. We deployed a whole new lab. We took down all of the patch panel wiring. We put the new router in. We put two new gigabit switches, two new 48-port gigabit switches in, redid everything. And overall, everything went smooth. A couple of hiccups, like today, I was called in the fax line, which is also the line for the alarm system. It wasn't there. I did have some students help me because we had to write down, patch panel to, what numbers were hot, which ones weren't, what cables went where. And they helped me out, but there was some transcoding. There was a little bit of things that they missed. So I was in there today testing and get everything up and running and ran into some issues. But over the last couple of days, today's only Tuesday. So it'd been yesterday. Well, because it just went live yesterday. We were having some issues with the wireless, but I knew that I replaced some switches, so I knew that I needed to probably reboot the access points. Rebooted the access points. Nothing. Still some weird issues. Now, this is where we're going to get a little geeky here. So if you have a pencil and paper and you want to follow along, please do, because I'm going to be writing out a scenario or a Sharpie, because we're going to talk about this and what happened. And I called Josh, Knucklehead Tech Josh on this, and he's like, I don't know, man, this is weird. This is weird, because it's one of those issues where you don't know. So let me start out with their IP address range is 192.168.0.1 through 192.168.1.255. So their subnet is a 255.255.254.0, not 255. So it's not just the 250 some, it's the next range. So you actually have like two ranges, okay? 0.1 through 1.255. Okay. That's fine. But you have to make sure that the subnet matches. And here's what was happening. I had some computers that could connect to the internet just fine. No problems. Everything worked great. Some were wireless. No problems. Everything worked great. Some were wired. No problems. Everything worked great. Some computers that were wireless would not connect to the internet. They would make an internet connection. They would get a DHCP scope. They would get an IP address. It's all correct. Subnet, gateway, everything's correct. Except they could not get out to the internet. I would then go to another computer that would not work on the wireless. I would take it and I would plug it in. It would work just fine. Could get to the internet, no problem. I said, well, it must be a wireless issue. We'll fix that. Then I got a call from another classroom downstairs, which is one wired coming in to a little switch, out of the switch to a whole bunch of computers, you know, four computers down there. None of them work. None of them could get online. None of them could get to the internet. They can get online. They have IP address, subnet, gateway. Everything's fine, but they could not get out to the internet. I would take my laptop, I would plug it into the switch, my laptop would get an IP address, and I could get online. I would unplug the switch, plug it back in, reboot it, nothing. Do an IP config release, do an IP config renew, flush the DNS. I did all of that on the local machine, took the cable from the switch, plugged it directly into the back of a computer that could not get online, still could not get online. Take the computer, take that same cable, unplug it from the switch, plug it into my laptop just to make sure I could get online. So now we have computers that are wired that couldn't get online. I have computers that are wireless that could not get online. I have computers, those same computers, I would plug them in and they could get online.
So you have some conflicts.
There are, but I'm not getting an IP address conflict. There's nothing like that. I'm not out of IP address ranges. I checked the scope and I even went up to the DHCP scope and I cleared out all of it. So brand new, starting to release new IP addresses. Nothing. Would not fix anything. I looked through all my DNS entries. Nothing. Cleared my cache in the DNS entries. Found some old stagnant forward lookups. Cleared all those. Nothing. No change. I had to leave because I came back for Linux for the Rest of Us and was talking to Dora and I said, you know, sometimes on a wireless network or sometimes on a network at all, sometimes you just work and work and work and you can't see it and you just walk away. Come back later. So I went back about 9:30 last night. And I sat down and I was banging my head against this thing because no change. I thought, okay, maybe magically it'll just work. Now, my computer, I would plug it in and it wouldn't work. I mean, I would plug it in and I could get online. I would unplug it. I would use the wireless and still I could not get out to the internet. So it was completely sporadic. It was completely random. No change. Now, remember, they have an IP address range. Oh, and I would assign a static IP address to a computer. 192.168.1.250. It's outside of the scope because the scope is 0.100 to 1.100. I would give them 1.200 or 1.250, 255, 255, 254.0, gateway 192.168, 0.1, IP address, or, you know, I give it a static DNS of whatever, 4.2.2.2. They're on Comcast, give them that one, give them OpenDNS. It didn't matter. Couldn't get out to the internet because it just wouldn't work. So I'm sitting there. I thought, well, let me reboot. Maybe when I switched out the router, I forgot to reboot the cable modem. So there's a Mac, you know, this really wouldn't make sense because that would cause if the router and the cable modem weren't talking, then nobody should be able to get online. Rebooted anyways. Rebooted the cable modem, rebooted the router, main router, rebooted the switches again. Maybe there's a cable conflict. I am completely grasping at straws here. Nothing. So then last night I was sitting there again and I was just, all right, this has got to be something right in my way. I'm on the router and I'm looking at the router. Now I configured the router here at my house. So all I had to do was unplug the old one, plug the new one back in, and they're up and running. When I configured the router here at my house, it automatically gave it, because I gave it a 192.168.0.1, it automatically gave it a subnet of 255.255.255.0. Which means the router could only see 192.168.0.1 through 192.168.0.255. It was only allowing half of the network traffic to go out to the internet. If you had an IP address of 192.168.1. something, the router did not know you, and while you were in this DHCP scope and you got an IP address from the DHCP server because that's a valid IP address, when you passed your traffic to the router to get out to the internet, the router said, I do not know where you're coming from, you do not make sense to me, and it would drop it. As soon as I changed the subnet on the router to 255.255.254.0, boom, everything worked, and all internet traffic could pass through.
But you thought you had originally done that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay.
Yeah. So I didn't think about it. But it was one of those things where this is one of those things where it will present itself in some weird fashion. So
can you back up a little bit? Go on sure. That range again, how you wanted it to work.
Okay.
Those ranges. I probably should write it down, but.
That's okay. So what the range that the current school has is 192.168.0.1.
Zero. Okay, that's one. Okay.
Through 192.168.1.255.
Okay.
So it covers 0.1 through 0.255, and then 1.1 through 1.255.
Two layers, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Exactly. It's going through two of them. So the subnet mask is what determines that. And on a 255.255.254.0, that is that range.
So you have to make that 254. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Everything has to have the same subnet or things won't talk. And everything had the same subnet except for the router. Because all of my networking gear, all of my printers, all my wireless access points, everything domain centric, not, you know, we're all in the 192.168.0. IP address range. My printers, switches, routers, access points. And so they all communicated just fine. There was no problem with them because the router was misset to only look at that IP address range. The router did not know it could not see anything from the 1. IP address range. And so it would
dish it out though.
Well, no, it was dishing it out from the DHCP server.
Yeah, but it wasn't get anything back, I guess.
Right. Yeah, because it would say I would get a valid IP address of 1.13 from the DHCP server.
It was doing what it was told to do.
Exactly. It was doing what it was told to do. But it was so weird because it was presenting itself in a different fashion. I thought there was a virus. Well, I didn't think there was a virus. I just thought there was something misconfigured somewhere. I mean, I rebooted everything under the sun. The servers, the...
Sometimes it's the easiest thing that you check last, right.
Right. So I spent a good amount of time on this. So the moral of the story, check your subnets, because this router, all it did was as soon as you put it in, it said, oh, that's a /24. Excellent. And assigned it that. If I would have caught that and said, oh, wait, no, I need to say other one and move on, I would have, everything would have worked fine. But it was presenting itself where half the system would work and the other half wouldn't.
So roughly how many total IPs could it dish out the way you had it set up?
1.1 So yeah, 0.100 through 0.255. So there's 256. And then another 100. So 356 IP address ranges are dished out in the DHCP scope.
But you don't have to have all those. My question is, how does it know when to dish out the 0 or the 100? Or
it just does it randomly.
So it does it. So they don't have to be used up. Mm-mm. They can just do it. Okay.
So that's what was weird. That's why I could be wireless and not get online, plug in, and because on wireless I was getting a 1. IP address.
So it randomly would give you a good one or the 100 one.
Yeah, right. Okay. And then I would plug in and it would give me one in the 0. IP address range and I could get online.
See, I always thought it would have to give you a random one unless you have that many used up and it's sequentially, if you had 255, whatever machines, you know, but.
Right. So yeah, I mean, you do get, once you get one, you hold on to it and then there's a lease time that can expire or possibly maybe just reassign you the same IP address. Mm-hmm. You know, the standard one that I used to use is 4 days. We were running out of them and I think I'm going to have to adjust them because we've now added more laptops. So now with a laptop, you now have a wired and a wireless. So you've now doubled that, you know, where next year we're going to be going to bring your own device. So I gave myself enough room to grow on either side and I probably will go from 0.75 to maybe 1.150 and give myself another, 26 IP address ranges, 26 IPs just to grow, maybe even go to to maybe even just go to leave my 0.100 and go to 1.200 and get myself another 100 on the top. But if because every time I assigned myself a static IP address range in testing this, I always gave myself a 1. IP address range. If I would have given myself a 0. Static IP address range, I would have been able to get out and I would have went, "Dop, there's my problem." But because I didn't, I only gave myself a 1. Every time I gave myself a static IP address range, a static IP, it wouldn't go out because I was giving it an IP address range that the router couldn't see.
I understand that.
So I gave it to, I sent Jeff a message late last night and he was like, "Dude, you got to talk about that on Geeksters. That's just one of those things so frustrating."
I need to read up on that. Yeah, I know how to, I haven't messed with any routers in a long time. But, the few times I did do multiple routers but it's been a long time since I've done any reading and I forgot a lot of it.
Right. Well, you remember Joe Mesman? He is a Geeksters listener.
Yes.
He's actually been, I worked with him on a site that he was working on and we've had some issues there lately as well. And what's happening is late last week, I got an email from them saying that they were just having some issues. And, again, it was just a mistake. The A record, which is what, they wanted to make a domain go to a certain location. And it was supposed to be a 198 and they mistyped it as a 190. And so, do you run into issues where if you mistype something, things don't go. Computers are stupid. Computers only do what you tell them to do. And if you make a mistake,
we have these issues at work. Like we have, I don't know, out of 20, 25 PCs, whatever, maybe a little less, we have 3, 5 of them have Windows 7 on there. But they have to sign on with the domain name / and the username. They always forget to put that domain name in there if it gets, somebody takes it out, whatever. And but we don't have to do that on the XP machines, just on the Windows 7 machines. We have to have that domain name in there.
Right, because on the XP machines, you have the drop-down, right?
Yeah, there is a drop-down. But it stays there. It's already there.
Right, and the Windows 7 machine, there is no drop-down.
Right, you have to type it in.
Right. Yeah.
But here's what they're doing today. You heard of SAP. We use SAP for our... Mm-hmm. Then we have a separate warehouse management system called Catalyst. You might have heard of that too. So they're going to go with something different. I'm not sure, but they're mapping the whole warehouse. We got a 1 million square foot warehouse. So the IT, the local IT guy, which I love to talk to when I can, we just start shooting him, but he knows his stuff, And, so they're mapping the whole warehouse wirelessly. So they're putting, I don't know if they're using what they're putting up in the ceiling. They had a guy in a boom in the ceiling, 30, 40 foot ceilings. Then you have a guy on the floor with a, looks like a wireless USB. So they're trying to see how far the signal goes before I guess they have to put another, they want to put all these drops in the ceiling, because we have these RFs on our fork trucks at work is where we put our order number, they put their order numbers in to get their assignment and whatnot. So that's pretty cool. But I don't know what they're going to put in. I don't know. So I'm assuming they're going to get rid of a Catalyst.
Maybe. Yeah. There's some cool wireless stuff out there. I got two clients last week, two new clients last week. One is a law firm, and the other one is actually the local coffee house that I go to. But it kind of came about, but this local coffee house has, 3 sites. There's 2 here in Hillsboro. And then tomorrow I'm making a site survey. It's going to be, 80 some degrees. I'm going all the way to Cannon Beach. So it's a coastal town. Somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to get in the car on a nice warm day, drive over the mountains, go to the beach. It stinks, but
a couple of weeks ago we were talking about you had so much more work. Now you'll have even more.
I know.
Without new help.
I know. I'm looking to hire somebody. I really am. But what was this? I was sitting down with a friend and I was just like, the wireless here is awful. We're sitting outside the coffee house. I mean, really, we're next to the doors and the whole thing is glass and I'm holding up my laptop, trying to find the right wireless, And I got a hold of one of the kind of the assistant managers who I've known for years. And I said, "Cindy, is there anything I can do to help? Like, as a client who comes in here and I'm there, I was there this morning sitting there drinking some coffee, working. I said, it's kind of brutal. There's been times where I've seen them, somebody says, "Hey, the wireless is down." They disappear. The wireless, I see the wireless go down.
What's their service? What are they getting?
Well, yeah, just a bit. So let me fit. So they, the wireless goes down, then it comes back up. So they just go back and they unplug the router and they plug it back in. So it has, it really isn't anything to do with the signal, with the service, because they get decent speeds. The problem is they're
hardware.
It's hardware. They're using some, brand new gigabit, but they're Linksys internal wireless, wireless routers. They're tucked back behind, you know, refrigerators and ovens and metal racks, but they're three rooms back from where the customers sit. So I've written up a proposal for what we're going to do is probably, if they want to use the same hardware, is bring them out to the front and use the power line adapters to do that. And then we can just mount them on the wall right in the front. Now we can, now the internal network is going, the internal antennas are going to be fine because you're just talking about covering a nice sized room that's wide open. Excuse me, that's wide open. So that's going to be fine. If we want to do something a little more, I'm looking at maybe the wire mesh or the mesh networks where we could do, a splash screen when people log in. Maybe they want to do some kind of, I don't think they're going to want to, but maybe a timer, you know, so you can't just come and park for 3 hours and drink a cup of coffee, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. They are very interested in doing things like content filtering because they don't want to get in trouble for any of that. They have received a couple letters a couple times for pirated information. Somebody downloaded a movie or something like that, from there. So there's a couple things we're going to do with that. And, I'm going to go visit another site tomorrow, but these aren't going to be huge sites. But it's just exciting to be able to help. And cause as Obando Computing, I get a chance to work with them to make their wireless better for their customers. And then as a customer, when I'm there, I get a chance to reap the benefits of having a better wireless connectivity and a network. And especially with the summers, they're going to be they have patios outside and tables. And so people just sit outside and drink coffee but struggle with wireless out there. So we're going to make that better for them.
Good deal.
So I'm excited. And then the law firm, that's just a tiny little like 4-person law firm. They've been using some old switches. I was there. They weren't having network gear. I looked at one of the switches that was in the closet and all the lights were just on, but people couldn't print. People were having issues. I unplugged it, plugged it back in. Blinky, blinky, blinky. Yay. Internet's back up. We can print. We can move things now. See, that looks like maybe had a brownout or something like that. So they're going to be moving, and I'm going to be taking care of them. We'll probably go to something a little more, small office, home office type stuff for a little more manageable routers and some switches and get them up to the, not go extreme, but get them up to the next level.
Very good.
So it's fun. It's fun. But with all the traveling, you know, that I do, whether it's to coffee shop or whether, you know, listeners do that, I've talked about Pro XPN in the past. We've talked about that doing for antivirus. And I can't remember who it was, but Cody and I had been talking about this and somebody had mentioned to us about privateinternetaccess.com. And I thought, well, let me take a look. You know, Pro XPN, you have a couple places you can go and stuff like that. But private internet access is a lot cheaper. And, well, okay, with Pro XPN, it's OpenVPN, which is really secure, which is great. But the OpenVPN client, it was only available on my phone. I couldn't do anything. Now, on my laptop, I could do PPTP, which is still secure, but it's not as good as OpenVPN. So, but this private internet access has a whole lot more sites. It does OpenVPN on your Linux boxes. You can do OpenVPN on your phones. And I don't know how much it was. It was super, it was really, I think it was like $6.95 a month. I think there's 30. No, maybe there's not 30 locations. Maybe there is 30 locations. I mean, there is a lot of locations that you can go through, but they have this whole setup about easy setup guides for Android for 4.0, Android 2.0, iPads, Ubuntu Linux, other VPN devices. You can buy configured routers from them. So if you want to buy a configured router, let's see what do they have. Well, it's actually, you go to flashrouters.com and you can buy stuff that looks like it has DDWRT already on it. Mm-hmm. So you could do all that. But these guys, they are pretty cool. And the walkthroughs are so simple to do. I walk through on my Linux box just, you know, to walk through. They have you download their certification key. They tell you where to put it. You just put it there. You point it there. You run it. I mean, it's pretty cool. And I'm paying the same amount of money that I was with, ProXPN. So I actually canceled my ProXPN account and I'm using this private internet access VPN. Not only that, okay. So if you want to get really geeky and you want to pay for this, because maybe you want to be anonymous, maybe you, whatever.
So is this, not to interrupt you, this no. is like running through a proxy?
Right, it's running through a VPN service. So if I want, so instead, okay. so I will go to my coffee shop, I'll connect to the VPN service in London. Now it looks like I'm actually in London because all my internet traffic is passing through London. So what is that okay. good for? Maybe there's a football match.
Hiding yourself.
Or a soccer match. Right. Maybe there's something overseas that you can't get to. It's only available overseas. You can watch it through that way. Or you're hiding yourself or whatever. But now, if you're going to hide yourself, then you definitely want to stay. You have some reason to stay anonymous. Okay. You don't want to give them your PayPal. You don't want to give them, you may not even have PayPal. Maybe you have a debit card. You don't want to do that because that's all traceable back to you. But they will select any kind of gift card. And I really mean any kind of gift card as payment for this. Give me a gift card, Mitch. Just a random gift card that you can think of.
$50.
No, not amount, but from a store.
Okay. All right. Target, whatever.
Oh, come on. Think harder than that. How about, what if I were to buy you a $50 Pottery Barn gift card? You could use that. What if I bought you an L.O. Bean gift card? Sure, why not? What if I bought you a Toys R Us gift card? Yeah, you could pay with that. Victoria's Secret. Zumiez, Kohl's, J.Crew, JCPenney, Cracker Barrel, Dick's, Ethan Allen, Fandango. I can buy you a Fandango gift card and you can pay for VPN service through your Fandango using the Fandango gift card to this company. So
that's weird.
It's actually kind of cool. So if you wanted to stay anonymous, you send me $50. I go to my store. I use my credit card or I get cash or whatever, and I buy a Fandango gift card. I then send you the Fandango gift card via the mail. You then go online and look at it. Now you're completely anonymous. I mean, you have to create an account with them, but my account through them, your account is not your name. It's the string of numbers and stuff. So they really do. They do a pretty good job.
This is me. You could go down illegal stuff and not get in trouble?
Yeah. I mean, if you know that whole six strikes rule, if you were downloading from, say, Singapore, well, Singapore doesn't have, you know, that. They support 976 plus servers in 10 different countries, compatible with Apple, Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, and of course, all of the major gift cards. So privateinternetaccess.com. I don't know. I've been using them and I like them. It's pretty good. So I would check it out.
I think the NSA guy, what's his name, Snowden, didn't he? I mean, every now and then he'll talk, but he'll go through like umpteen proxies at one time or something, right. too. And right. it's you can't find them from that. It's impossible. Or
yeah, I don't know. I don't know either.
I mean,
I don't know much about encryption. And speaking of encryption, I'm gonna say it here live on the show so it's done because I know he's listening. I know he's in the chat room. I want to see if we can get Tony from Sunday Morning Linux Review on because he did a talk on PGP and GPG, which is the pretty good privacy.
Right, right.
And stuff like that. So I know that we've talked about doing some of that. You know, that would be interesting to have him on just to talk about that. Maybe cool. Just a 10,000 foot overview really quick. Not really get heavy, crazy detailed into it. And that can be for another show, but, I don't know. I think that one sounds kind of fun. And the one last thing that I came across this week was it's a year old though. I didn't even realize that until after I put it in the show notes. And once it's in the show notes, it doesn't change. This is a comprehensive list of 26 bootable antivirus rescue CDs for offline scanning. So it has things like, AVG, Bitdefender, Komodo, you know, all that kind of stuff. These are links. So I don't know much about these. Like I said, it's a year old, so I don't even know how much of these are still available. But Raymond.cc is a place there for looking at. I don't know. He just has a list of 26 stuff. He kind of goes through a whole bunch of different, you know, he's kind of just the website seems like it's kind of just a jack of all trades type site. But yeah, here's a place where you can find 26, CDs. I've only used a couple of them. I think I may have used ABG. I know I've used, Kaspersky. I don't know if I've used any of the other ones. I didn't even think that there were more, but there's...
Yeah, there's another thing out there, and I forgot the name of it. I'm sure they're still around, where you can put them all on one CD, you know, or DVD.
Oh, right.
Quite a few of them. And,
like a thumb drive.
I made one of those. And you can choose to boot up to, like, say, Kaspersky or whatever whatever you could fit on a DVD or CD, DVD or CD, yeah. But I forgot what the name of that was called.
Is it like easy to boot?
No.
No, somebody in one of the forums here mentions that. Easy to boot, the number two boot, multi-boot, or maybe it's, it looks like they changed
There's
it.
There's probably more than one out there.
Grub for DOS.
With my memory and my age, I remember the program. I could probably pull it out somewhere.
But, yeah.
I probably had like 6 or 8 different ones on a DVD.
Yummy? Why UMI? All I did was Google multi-boot USB, and it's just, they're all over the place. That's been my week.
It's good to have.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's kind of been my week. It's been good. It's been, entertaining. I've definitely, looking forward to some new stuff. It's been a little bit busy. The beginning of the week was pretty slow, but then it picked up. Well, that was last week. I think today's only Tuesday, and I'm like, well, the beginning of the week was good. Oh, well. So anything exciting coming up for you then?
Other than my eyelid surgery, I don't think so.
No. All right. Mm-mm. Well, cool. So if you guys want to get a hold of me, I'm martin@obandocomputing.com, masculine in the forums and in the chat room. You can always find me on Google+. Just look up, I think I'm just mobando in the Google+. Mitch, if people want to send us an email or like some show notes, sorry, email or voicemail.
Yeah, email at geeksters@pawnuts.com. You can reference me or whoever. And voicemails, which we haven't had in a while, at 7076-PODNUT. That's 7076-PODNUT.
Yeah. Well, cool, guys. It's a good Tuesday. We'll see what happens next week. We're looking at trying to get some guests on. We're just trying to figure out our timing, scheduling. We would, I enjoy hanging out with Mitch, but I'd like to have a lot of our other hosts on us when we have some guests on. Tim, we're missing you, so hurry up, Fred. I know Fred's flying today. He's actually flying. He had a golfer with him today, so he was
Fred Couples.
Fred Couples. I had to Google that person. So, but Fred
I heard of him. Yeah, he's up there. Yeah.
I mentioned it to Fred this morning, and Fred says, "Well, apparently you weren't watching the Masters when he was in second place." Yeah, and I said, "No, nope, sorry,
I heard him."
So, but yes. So, guys, well, thank you, everybody, for coming out and watching us live, supporting our sponsors, D7. Check out D7 if you haven't already. Any of our sponsors, whenever you have a purchase you want to purchase, you want to buy. Anyways, podnuts.com/Amazon. It doesn't cost you anything, but yet it helps us a little bit. If you're at the Podnuts website, click on the donate button if you want to give $1, $2, $10 a month. Every little bit helps. It allows us to bring you content without having a lot of sponsors all the times. There's not a lot of advertisements that we do. We don't need to, because you guys have stepped up and are supplying us with a little extra money to help us do this. So we thank everybody who listens, everybody who downloads, everybody who calls in, texts. And that's not just for Geeksters. That's on all of our shows. And we have shows after shows after shows, and Podnuts is growing and growing and growing, and definitely blessed to be part of this crew and hang out with you guys on Tuesdays. So I will see you, Mitch, soon. Everybody else, I'll catch you guys next Tuesday. Have a great fiscal week. Bye-bye.
D7-2 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.